It's been said that most people die at age 25 and wait to be buried at age 65. So the big question is this: how are entrepreneurs like us who believe in God and read the Bible preparing for the financial danger that the bankers and brokers do not want us to know about? How do we resist a life that's less than we are promised and hold on to our dreams so that we can live in fullness every day? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the secret. My name is Nate Scott, and welcome to the Life is Rich podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Nate Scott here, author of Life is Rich, How to Create Lasting Wealth. You are here once again for another episode of Life is Rich podcast with Nate Scott. Today, I'm very delighted to bring you a very special interview with a good friend of mine, Mr. Tony Fleming. But before I get into that, let me give you guys a reminder for those of you that are just joining us from wherever you are in the world. Life is rich means live in fullness every day. That means spiritually, mentally, emotionally, relationally, physically, and financially. It's a principle-centered, biblically-based leadership program focused on personal growth and entrepreneurship, specifically addressing the fact that 77 million baby boomers are retiring and face like cash flow danger, that 66 out of 100 people age 65 earn less than $30,000 retirement, that 47% of people say if they had a $400 emergency, they'd have to sell something or borrow money to address it, and 68% of people are living paycheck to paycheck. It's about how to think versus what to think. How to think versus what to think. And so today, I know that what we're going to do is we're going to expand your mind. We're going to talk to you about just some things that we've discovered throughout our years, that the power of personal growth and development and the impact it's had on. So to that end, Mr. Tony Fleming, welcome. Tony, how you doing, my man?
Doing great, man. How you doing, Nate?
Doing great. So delighted that you had the opportunity to pencil me in on your schedule. I'm looking forward to just exposing others to you. You've got a lot of stuff that's been going on. I really appreciate your book club. And so let's just start out by just telling them your story, man. Tell them about who Tony Fleming is and just walk us through the journey that brings you to where you're at today.
All right. So first of all, how am I looking, man? Is this shade back here all right? Is a, you know, you got to have the lighting right now, you know, with the Zoom.
I think you're sharp. You're sharp.
Okay. All right. All right. So, man, I'm going to give you the long version quickly. All right. So grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. Went to Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi. Everybody's pumping up Deion Sanders now. He's really making Jackson boom, but I was there in the 80s. Graduated, moved to Atlanta. Actually went to New Orleans for about 6 months. Couldn't get anything. My sister was there. She was in law school, so I stayed with her for a while and tried to get, you know, get a job and just didn't really get anything. Then I moved to Atlanta. Had a couple of sales jobs in Atlanta because my first interview was with the Atlanta Journal newspaper. And the first thing they said to me was, I needed sales experience. I'm like, well, I just got out of college. How could I, that's a catch 22. So I left and went and started doing some, you know, like straight commission sales jobs. Like, I don't know if you remember this, there was a magazine called the Black Pages in Atlanta. It was huge at one time and it started spreading all over the country. I actually met the owner of the company at a seminar one night, and I asked him, you know, if I could work for him, you know, straight commission, because I need to get some experience sales, and then I was going to go back to Atlanta Journal and get that job. So he said, yeah. So I did that for about 6-7 months, and then actually went back, interviewed with the Journal. With the experience that I got, they hired me as a account executive. So I was actually out I had the Buckhead, the downtown, the midtown territory, where I sold ads for the Atlanta Journal. I did that for 3-4 years. And then I got hired by AT&T, and I worked with AT&T for about 5 years. I was doing the account executive sales, sold the top of the line phone systems. Like, if anybody know about AT&T, they had this Merlin brand, which is a top of the line phone system. So I would sell those systems to big corporations. And then, you know, I ran across a home-based business. I had a lady tell me, I was in a department store one day, and I overheard her talking to a guy about getting an LLC and setting up a home-based business. And he was debating with her, and she said, look, it just makes sense because you need that for your tax write-off. She said, I don't care how many babies you have. I don't care how big your house. It's not going to be enough tax write-offs. You still need a business for some tax write-offs. I said, okay. So I listened to her and asked her. Now I tell everybody that I didn't start my business for tax breaks because it's kind of like, you know, a little, but I did kind of start my business for tax breaks because I didn't know anything about a home-based business. I went to a meeting. The lady said it was a home-based business. I said, I need one. I joined and I got started that way. And so for the last 25 years, man, I've been in the home-based business, network marketing. That's all I've been doing. Started off again for taxes, and then I start making money. But I realized there was some real money to be made because, you know, at first I didn't understand it. I was that guy that I was Saul, you know, Saul before Paul. So I was crucifying people who had a business like that and said, you know, it didn't work. And then I had my road to Damascus, and I changed over to Paul. And so for the last 25 years, I've been, you know, promoting and being involved with the home-based business network marketing.
So let's back it up a little bit. When you were in Jackson State, what did you study?
Communication.
And what did you anticipate doing coming out?
Communications. I'm gonna tell you this. I really wanted to be, Tom Joyner before Tom Joyner. It really wasn't a Tom Joyner at that time. It wasn't, you know, you just had DJs on the radio and you had, what was my man's name? he used to do this thing in Atlanta once a year called Jack the Rapper. And it was another guy who hosted that. So he would do big radio shows and he would come to town and people come to his events. And so I wanted to do something like that. Not like a, you know, like a Casey Kasem, but not like that, but more of a, like a Tom Joyner. But people weren't really hearing it at the time, and it really didn't pay. You know what I'm saying? Because I did a little radio at Jackson State. We had a jazz station there. Then I also did some, what do you call that when you finish college and you, well, before you, the last, sure. I did intern, actually at, was YLD, WYLD in New Orleans. My sister had hooked that up for me. And so what I, you know, went looking for that, but it wasn't really paying anything, and people weren't really trying to hear that kind of conversation, what I was talking about. They wanted a, you know, a DJ that rhymed, and that wasn't really, I was trying to, you know, talk some talk in the morning and then play some music and all that. And I tell you, I didn't want to pay the price of waiting to my time, you know, because if you wait to your time, you're going to be broke between that time. I really didn't want to do that. And I heard sales was making money. People made money in sales, and that's how I kind of jumped when I got out of school, to just saying, forget that. I'm going to jump over here where I can make some commission sales.
Wow. Wow. And when you made that leap, if you will, how did you decide that it was something that you could actually do?
Well, you know, I go back and look at my history, and you know, I was always that dude that was a little bit different. In high school, you know, I was that guy that, I give example, me and my partners in the summertime. Well, okay, let's go even back further than that. Ninth grade, 10th grade, no, go back further than that. Eighth grade, I had a job. You know, I actually came to Atlanta for the summer, stayed with my aunt, and my uncle got me a job at this grocery store. You know, the guy paid me under the table. I wasn't supposed to be working there, but I took the job and I went there every day. So I was that guy that was always out looking for work. My ninth grade year, I was always out hustling. Me and a partner of mine, I don't know if you remember this, but they used to have these coupons in this little booklet. It's like a little book. And you would go sell these books to people. They would pay $50 for the book, and it'd be like 100 different coupons in there for restaurants and places. Man, me and a partner of mine used to, in the summertime, we would do that, and you know, whoever the guy was who hired us, he would take us into this real rich neighborhood, you know, like we call it Mountain Brook in Birmingham, and it was up on the hill, and he would drop us off. We didn't realize, you know, it's two brothers in that neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? But he would drop us off, and we would go door to door selling these coupon books, you know what I'm saying? So I always had that kind of, you know, mindset of hustling almost. Then I, after that, you know, in the 10th grade, I remember working at a restaurant. I told my mom I was going to get a job. She said, you ain't get no job. I said, okay, watch. And I went out with them one day, got this busting tables, washing dishes at this restaurant. And then started working at this grocery store, sacking groceries, you know, bagging groceries. And I always was hustling, even at college, even in college. From my sophomore year to my senior year, I worked a job where we drove, me and a partner of mine drove this van at a hotel to pick up airplane pilots and truck drivers and bring them back to the hotel. So we did that from like 2 to 10, like 4 or 5 times a week. I was working 8 hours a day in college. So I was always that hustler. So when I saw opportunity to make commission sales, I looked at it. What happened there? That's what I looked at it as a way that I can change my life. So that's what I did. That's how I jumped into it. I didn't have a problem thinking. I wasn't a guy that was afraid of rejection. You know, I knew that was a part of life. And so that's why I probably thought I could do more, you know, when it comes to commission sales.
Got it. And were you having success in your professional career?
When you say professional,
in your career with AT&T and
I made major success in that, man. You know, I tell stories about that all the time. That when I got hired in Atlanta, they transferred me to Montgomery, Alabama, which is like 2 hours from Atlanta, and they put me in the worst area in with AT&T because it was a 9-state regional area. Had the home office for the region was, well, my manager for the region was in New Orleans. So we had a 9 southern state region, and Montgomery was the worst territory. They even told me that when I got there, because I had the, you know, from Montgomery to Auburn to Selma, Alabama, that whole big area was a bad area for, they hadn't had sales there in a long time. So when I went there, for the first 3 or 4 years, man, I broke every record they ever had, you know, and it was like, you know, it was like something natural for me. You know, I figured out a way to make it happen. I used the brand name AT&T, which a lot of people wouldn't, because I let me tell you what I did. I found in the warehouse at the office where I worked, there was an old AT&T bag that had the big logo on it. It was a brand on there. So nobody was using it. So I went and got that bag and I put a demo phone in that bag. People were not doing that. Folks was not. They were more professional than me when it came to that. So I put the demo phone in the bag and I would go out and make cold calls. And when I walk into an office, I had the AT&T bag on my shoulder and I would just tell them, I said, give me 5 minutes. Let me show you how this works a little bit. And I really didn't know, to be honest with you, Nate, how the phone worked. But it was beautiful to have the bag, the brand name. And because they would say the phone man is here, like, you know, automatically you're going to do AT&T. And then I would just show them how pretty the phone was and pretend like I knew what I was doing. And man, I broke every record. Matter of fact, we used to have contests every month. And my boss stopped having them after 2 years because he said that I won all of them. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I did well with AT&T.
Wow. Now that brings to mind that you developed a process that using the tools that were available.
Yeah.
And in turn, went about just repeating the process.
You know what, too? What I realized, too, Nate, is that, and it kind of goes back to mindset and personal development, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
I remember walking into one of my boss's office, and the first time ever I ever heard of Earl Nightingale, you know, he had it playing. He had a tape playing. It was cassette tape then, playing in his office. I was waiting on him to get off the phone, and it was playing in the background. And I was like, wow, this dude making a lot of sense. It just made sense to me what he was saying. I had never heard it before, though. And when he got off the phone, man, I had to beg my manager to let me take that cassette series home with me because he wasn't going to let it go. Man, I took that tape series home with me, and I'm getting to a point, I'm going to tell you why I did that. I actually, because he couldn't burn it like a CD, right? So I had to go out and buy those Scotch tapes and Maxell tapes, and I set up all night and recorded every one of them. You had to listen to all. You couldn't fast forward. You had to listen to all of them. And I had them all on Maxell and Scotch tape. And I brought his series back, gave it to him. And then I put that in my car. And every day I took my Tupac out. And every day I would just listen to Earl Nightingale. Now, here's the key. Me listening to him every day gave me the courage to leave that office and go sell those systems. Most of the employees there, the sales employees, wouldn't leave the office. They was afraid. Now, they knew the equipment better than me. I didn't know the equipment. I just knew it was pretty. It was AT&T at the bag, and I knew if I show it to enough people, I was going to win. But they knew the equipment back and forward, but they was afraid to go out and get rejection. And by me listening to Earl Nightingale in that car every day, it gave me the strength to go out and gave me the different mindset to go out and talk to people. And that's all sales is. You get in front of enough people, you'll have success. But if you don't, like most of the guys stayed in the office, and you know, so I will attribute my success to that, to the mindset, the personal development, and being out, just getting in front of people.
Right. Can you pinpoint, or can you recall what are those things that really had an impact on you? Always when I speak and train, oftentimes I ask people to give me a value statement. What did you get a value from listening to Earl Nightingale way back when? Can you tell me what that was?
Well, man, everything from the law of attraction. He talked about that what you think about, you bring about. All of that from, is numbers, that you have to go through the numbers to win in life. Everything that he talked about on those tapes, man, was just profound. He talked about, the one about Acres of Diamonds. He gave the story of Acres of Diamonds that what you were looking for was already there in your backyard. He told the story of the African guy went all across the world looking for something that was already there. And he sold his home, and the diamonds were in the back of the home. So what he was saying was that look at where you are first and then dig there. Now, if that doesn't happen, then you go. But most people want to run somewhere else first. So, I mean, it's tons of stories that I've learned through Earl Nightingale.
Man, this here already starts to give me joy, because it's like for me in 1996, when I walked into a room full of happy people, and I got exposed to the world of personal growth and development and entrepreneurship. And I tell people, it was in that moment when I realized the power in the library. I was like, is this it? Why isn't people telling this stuff? It all speaks, and I oftentimes will tell people that it's because of that introduction to personal growth and development that I learned how to read the Bible as a practical manual. Here I was that grew up in the church, but it wasn't until I got a chance to see and hear information that allowed me to then say, wait a minute, this is this. And right. I was able to see the correlation. And that has led me to say, you know, you are the asset. You know, that's the whole message of Life is Rich, is that Life is Rich means live in fullness every day. Realize I'm Christ's heir. That Acres of Diamonds, when I hear you speak of that story, I think about the fact that truly each of us has a diamond that's in us. And we go so much looking for it elsewhere. You truly mine yourself, you'll end up uncovering that jewel that's already in you. So that right there is something that, in having that information, how have you leveraged the fact that you know what has been so impactful to you? How have you leveraged that in achieving those things that you look to achieve or have looked to achieve getting you to this point?
Well, I mean, 100%, it's just the diligence that I've, you know, I call it stick-to-itiveness, if I can say it right, stick-to-itiveness. I know it's not a word, don't go looking for it. But the things that I learned gave me the ability to stick to something, you know, to stick to what you're doing until you get it right. You know, that 10,000 hours, I was putting that in before I even knew about the 10,000 hours. You know what I'm saying? It was just, you got to stick to this thing to make it work, because in the beginning, whatever you do, and especially if it's something, you hear that hammering? Now, why today, out of all days, this town home I live in, the guy's outside working now. I've been asking them to take care of this tree out here for like 2 months. Now today, they coming out here knocking down this tree I got that's blocking the sidewalk. So, but the stick-to-itiveness is the thing that that I got from it, which means put in the time, put in the work, the seed time and harvest, that if you continue doing something, it's going to happen for you. It's like, you know, like the farmer knows that when he plants the whatever he's planting, if he keeps watering and keeps, you know, monitoring that seed, that it's going to grow eventually, even if you don't. So that's the kind of stuff I got from, you know, learning with Earl Nightingale. I'm going to tell you some more stories, man. I when you said library, I started reading books like probably right after that. And at one point I was already reading, you know, autobiographies. So I was reading stuff like, I read Miles Davis' book, which is an excellent book, man. That's anybody, if you hadn't read the Miles Davis book, that's an excellent book. I read, you know, I was reading books like that, Jim Brown, people like that. But then when I start picking up things like Think and Grow Rich and, you know, as a man, like, this is one of my favorite books, right? This book right here, keep it on my desk. The James Allen, The Wisdom of James Allen. So you got like four or five different books within this one book. And As a Man Speaking is one of them. So when I start, all right, that's somebody calling me on the phone. So when I start reading that, I used to go home when I left the AT&T office, and my partners who live across from me, they would come knock on the door at my apartment. I wouldn't answer because I was in there reading. It just took me to another place, man, when I started reading those other books. And those books gave me the ability to deal with all the negativity that was coming in the beginning of me trying to get started in business and life. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't experience in my mind as much as most people because I was feeding my mind all the time. You know, books became my life, man. I mean, they became my friends. Like when people say, you know, hang around wealthy people, I didn't know any wealthy people. But when I started reading those books of wealthy people, then they became, you know, like my friends. And that was my life. Still is.
Wow. Wow. And so tell me about a moment in time where you really had to lean on that in order to overcome something.
You know what? This is, I know this is going to sound, I was sharing this with my wife the other day. I've gone through a lot in life, but I never looked at it that way. So it's kind of hard for me to pull up a lot of things that I went through because it was just like a part of the process. You know what I'm saying? I can think of times I was down to, you know, $5 in my checking account, but I still was operating. I was down to little nothing, but I never looked at it that way. That's why it's hard for me to go back and pull it up. I know it's there. You know, I know it's there, but it's like, and I wish I could, because maybe I have to sit down and try to really pull it up because I can put it in a book. But it's like I just knew that was part of it, you know, from me reading that those things were going to happen. So, you know, me down to little nothing, I never really panicked.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It's great that you're saying that, because my question isn't rooted in a woe is me story. In fact, the way that you're responding corresponds to what I believe is the result of that work you put into yourself. Mm-hmm. You see, when I share the story of going from 5 million to zero, I'm not bent over breaking down, crying and trying to paint a sad story. When I talk about going from a 6,000 square foot home to a 10 by 12 room with no running water, I'm not doing that in a lamenting state.
Right.
What I'm able to do is I'm gonna say the thing that allowed me to go through that and not jump out of windows and not right. to do all those other things that others would do is right. because I was never defined by that situation in a way that was not expected, because I had an end state that I still was moving towards, recognizing that there was a true journey. You know what they say is that hope in the future is what gives you power in the present. I hear in you in saying what you just now said, that the fact is that you knew where you were going and you trusted the process.
Oh man, I knew that it was a part of it. And I knew that there's no way I could lose if I stayed on the grind, if I put them 10,000 hours, it was gonna happen for me. And I can go back and think, you know, I know it was a lot of bad situations, but it really wasn't bad situations. It was like, okay, you know, what I do now, you know, what did so-and-so in this book say, who was a wealthy guy when he went through that, what did he say? What did he do? And I, you know, I did it. You know what I'm saying? You know, look, Proverbs, like you said, I used to read the Bible, But when I really started reading Proverbs, man, I really looked at, because Proverbs is really the leadership books that we read. You know what I'm saying? It's just that they break it down in different stories so they can come across a little bit differently. But, you know, all that part of the process, you know, I think about Paul in the Bible. You know, Paul was one of them guys that if you really look at him, which probably my favorite besides Jesus, but Paul was my dude. Paul knew, this was Paul knew. If you ever just check him out, when he went to a city to talk, he knew he had a certain amount of time before they was gonna come throw him in jail. So when he came down, he would start talking, because he knew they were gonna come get him. He knew he was going to jail in every city, but he didn't care. He knew that was a part of the process. He knew that they was gonna come get him. I still remember the story, and I want to say it was him talking to King Agrippa, and King Agrippa was listening to him so intently, he stopped the conversation, and he told the guys, lock him up. They said, well, why you say it? He said, man, he almost had me. He said, I was listening to him, he almost had me. And so, you know, I think about those kind of guys and the stories and the books that I read, and I'm like, this is just a process. You got to go through it.
Yeah. I've been doing some teaching on that whole process. And I talk about the pipeline and mastering the pipeline. And what's really great as I hear you, and you can really go into a little bit more depth, but I talk about that when someone tells me they don't like sales, if they're not good at sales, I have to say, well, what part of it? What part of it aren't you good at?
Right.
Is it the lead? Is it the making the contact? Is it the booking the appointment? Is it the doing the presentation? Is it asking for the sale? Or is it the follow-up?
Right.
You see, you can't tell me you're not good at it.
Yeah.
Unless you tell me where you're not good at, because if you can tell me that, then I can walk you through, well, what do we need to improve upon?
Right.
What do you think your strength is?
Understanding that rejection is a part of life and that you got to go through the numbers to get to it. I think that's my mindset is, and that's what I talk to people about all the time. A lot of people say they don't like sales. What they really don't like is rejection, because they like sales. If I gave them a list of 50 people and I told them, let's say this is you, Nate. You said, Tony, I don't like sales. I said, okay, if I gave you a list of 50 people right now and I tell you, Nate, I've already talked to them. They already ready to go. They're going to spend $1,000 when you call them, and you're going to make $200 off every person. You're going to pick up the phone and call every one of them. You like sales then. You know, that sales is great. But what you don't like is calling those people and they reject you and tell you, no, I'm not interested. That's the part that people don't like. And so I think for me, I've learned to deal with that part. I understand that that's a part of the process. I know that getting past those numbers, eventually you're going to find the people who are interested. It's like, you know, somebody serving coffee at a restaurant and, you know, the first 10 tables, they don't want coffee, but, you know, the other 10 want coffee. But most people don't go that far. So that's, I guess that would be my thing.
It's going.
I'm here. That's the phone coming in on my cell phone. And now we see what happens. What happens? Do I go blank?
Just the screen goes off, but I can still hear you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mentally, and it's probably gonna call again because that person is persistent. They gonna call right back. But mentally, I think that's the thing that, and I believe, Nate, this is my whole story, my whole life. I believe that mindset is so important. It's the most important thing. If you got the right growth mindset and the right mindset on how you think and how you feel about things, you can change your life. You know, the how-tos, you can learn that anytime. But if you don't have the mindset, like, for example, somebody could give me a list of things that I need to do to be successful, right? These are top 10, because everybody's looking for the top 10 things to do, right? So we give you the top 10 things. That's why when people buy books and stuff, they're looking for the top 10 things, all right? So now, here's the question. What's going to make you do those top 10 things? Because they're right in front of you. People ask me all the time. They say, well, Tony, tell me how to do it. Okay. I'll tell you exactly how to do it. Da, 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 da. Now, when two people say no to you, or the third person say no to you, what's going to make you keep doing it? Because the how-tos work. It's just that most people don't do them long enough. You see what I'm saying? It's got to be your mindset that's going to make you go through all of that, because I can give you a list of everything to be successful, but what's going to make you get up every morning and go do it? It's got to be your thought process. It's got to be the reason why you're doing it. It's got to be your belief system. And all that is mindset, you know, because 90% of people believe that if you tell me how you did, I hear people say all the time, how you did it, that they can go do it. That's not true. I can tell you all day long how it was done, but do you have the mentality to deal with everything you got to deal with to get to where you're trying to get to? And most people don't have that mentality. That's why I'm always working on that. That's why I'm always talking about books and listening to audios and all that, because have you heard, I can't think of the guy's name, he's a doctor, and he talks about that between the womb and 9 years old is the most fertile time in a person's life for them to receive information. Because you got to understand that is no information there. So when you start receiving information, it's kind of like putting water on a dry soil, like a flower that's dry. It sucks it right in. So the person, the information that was received between from the womb to age 9 is still in you because it was the most fertile time. Now watch this. After 9, 10, 11, you got so much information, a lot of stuff you're not receiving. I don't care. You got to keep hearing and hearing. But at that point, that's why I say when I talk to people, it's a lot of things that's still in them or still in us that we don't even know is buried deep down inside of us because, you know, we went on and got a degree, we went on and got a new car, went on and got some new clothes, got a new house, and we think that our life has changed because of that. No, we got to go back in a, think about this. If you grew up in a middle-class neighborhood or a poor neighborhood, what was the thought process? What did you hear growing up? I'm telling people all the time. I know you heard this. If you grew up in one of those neighborhoods, rich people are evil. You know what I'm saying? Money is evil. Money is, you know, you chasing money. You love money. Those things were programmed at an early age. So Nate, now we up here, we're trying to move forward. We're trying to advance in life. We're trying to be more successful. And we don't realize that stuff is still buried in us. Because we're thinking, okay, I want to be rich, but we're thinking rich people evil. You know what I'm saying? All that stuff is still in us. And so the books and the things, the audios people hang around, it helps pull that stuff up. And then now you can evaluate it again and say, okay, should I still think that way? You know what I'm saying? Should I still be thinking that way? Because there's a lot of people I meet that are thinking that way and they don't realize they're thinking that way. The world looks at them as being successful. But then when you mention something to them that will make them step a little bit out of the box, oh, they're scared. And they don't know why. And it's some of the programming that was put in at an early age.
Yeah. Given that scenario and that situation and what we just now came through with 2020 and even going now into 2021, how have you seen those things play out in the lives of people that you've maybe spoken to or that have had their life disrupted that may have never given you any time? Have you had any conversations as of late within the last year in which you know what's hindering someone, yet they have not been receptive or they have been receptive? I don't know, you know, whichever scenario is.
Yes, of course. And here's the challenge. You know, everybody says that it's like this. You ever been pulled over? And I don't know, you probably haven't, but I have. You get pulled over, you're speeding, and they give you a speeding ticket. And you're like, dang, dog, I ain't gonna speed no more. So then you pull off and you drive speed limit for another hour. Then you back speeding again. Because you're like, that's who you are. You know what I'm saying? You just gonna drive like that. People do that. It's people right now I've talked to that have said that. They look at their life now, they realize what the pandemic did to them. It really made them start thinking. But Nate, it's just talk for most people because it's still not, they hadn't worked on the inner person. The inner me is the enemy because that inner me is still there. It's gonna come back. You know what I'm saying? So I can start working with them and start saying things, but then I see them fall off. And they go back, and I know what it is, but they go back to their normality, you know, what they consider normal. And they might feel like they really want to change, but the change has to come here. And it's not, it's never addressed here. You know, that's the thing that, you know, we want to do certain things, but then when we try to do it, we just fall back to, it's like, you know, I had to give example of quarterbacks who can run and they tell them to learn to drop back and pass. But then when they panic and pressure get on them, they're going to do what they know how to do, is take off running. Same thing with people. They say, I want to change, I want to do this. But then when the pressure, like Mike Tyson says, when everybody got a plan until they get hit. And then once they get hit, they fall back to their normal of, you know, watching TV and doing everything that they said they wasn't going to do to change their life. They go back to that because that's their comfort zone.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, yeah, people have contacted me, but I've already seen that too, already.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That punch thing, I tell you what, from a practical standpoint at West Point, now I was enlisted before I was an officer, before I went to West Point, and I boxed before those things. But at West Point, you had to take boxing. It was a required class. Wow. And it was a required class because they wanted people to, they knew that most people had never been in a fight. So boxing was required. Wow. So that you can actually get hit, so that you can determine how you're going to re-
Had you boxed before then, though?
I did, yeah.
You had?
I had.
Oh, but a lot of guys hadn't.
Most hadn't fought. Most hadn't had a fight.
Okay, right.
Now, not only did I fought growing up, but then when I joined the Army, I boxed to stay in shape for basketball.
Okay.
Then I went into, then I served as a soldier, then I went to West Point.
Okay.
And at West Point, they had a required class for boxing because most people going to West Point came out of high school. They graduated from high school and then they got the appointment to West Point. I was older going there. So they created the conditions such that they could help a person to realize, what are you going to do when you get a punch?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can experience whether or not you're going to shrink back or whether or not you move through, so you can get conditioned because you're going in. So it's interesting in that analogy because that's very, very real. You know, characters revealed in those moments.
Yep.
Those things which you've gone through life where that's why you could take a, you know, someone that has grown up without having everything given to them. And then you can put them in a situation where they just get the opportunity. And they break through because they were a fighter throughout. They were hungry.
Right.
Whereas you can then take someone that had all things given to them and put them in a situation where there's some resistance, and then you actually see them crumble and not able to be able to push through. And people will wonder why that is. It's because you weren't conditioned to muscle through stuff. You hadn't had no life lessons. You didn't go through, you know, trying to make ends meet and all those things. And so that's why I find that this opportunity of network marketing is something where I'm so committed to at least being a voice, mm-hmm. of leveraging my professional background and my professional successes to be able to then provide some type of perspective to say, hey, listen, these are real opportunities that if you evaluate them and you determine what the right thing is, if you bring your A game, if you've been excellent in all these other things, then you should come over and you should be able to move forward. And if you were willing to learn this new stuff,
right,
you can have an incredible life that you may never ever have. But so many times people are fearful of that. Why do you think that is?
Well, again, I think that's the part of what we heard growing up. You know, you hear, you know, I'm telling you something, this is driving me crazy, these people out here, because why? The exact time we get on here that they show up right now, it's 1,000 townhomes out here. They've been doing all of them for the last 2 weeks. Why on today at the exact time they show? There's something going on with that. I don't know what it is, but
I'm gonna tell you what it is. It's a matter of, we got information that has to be delivered.
Right.
And it's really a real world opportunity for us to walk through that distraction and say, you know what? Yes, that is going on.
But we're gonna do it.
Yeah. But this is what we're doing. Yep.
Yeah. But to answer that question, it goes back to, again, you hear people say the rich get richer and the poor get poor. And the reason why is because of the mindset and the the part of life when we grew up, at the part when our mind was more fertile, the stuff that we heard at that time is locked in. So think about it. If you grew up in a wealthy household in a wealthy neighborhood, you didn't hear anything like, I don't know how we're going to make it. I don't know if we got enough money. I don't know if we can do this. You probably was a part of the private clubs that your father was a part of, where, you know, it costs $100,000 to be a member. And when you go in those private clubs, all you heard was, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. So your whole thought process is success. So if you grew up in a neighborhood where it wasn't success, and at the time that you was really more fertile, that stuff got locked into you that you can't win in life, that nobody's supposed to do that. You can't do that. Nobody has a business. Now, what we can do is try to go to school, get a good education, you know, work for 40 years. And this is the narrative that's taught. I call it inbox thinking. And that's go to school, get good grades, work hard, work for 40 years. If you want to make part-time money, UPS or FedEx, those are good places to go work. Or go get a master's degree or PhD and, you know, attend the biggest church in town. And that's pretty much it. Now, anything outside of that, now that's when you're going to get attacked. And that's how most people are not ready to deal with that. So they get outside of that, which is network marketing or real estate or anything else. They're going to be talking to 90% of people that's in here. And those 90% going to hit them with, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be. And if you're not prepared to deal with that, Nate, you're going to fall right back. You know, I always say you can see somebody who works hard, say they got two kids and they work part-time. They work a good job, then they work part-time at FedEx. They go to work at 7 at night, get off at 12. The neighbors will tell you, man, this guy, he is great, man. He's taking care of his family. Now, that same person got a job, and then at 7 o'clock, they start working their part-time business. And they stay up late at night. The neighbors who was in the box gonna tell them, you chasing money. I can't believe you're trying to go after these things. Because now people are not prepared to deal with that. So when that rejection hits them, they're not prepared to deal with it. And so they just cave in and fall right back into the community that they were in. And so that's why I always say, Nate, that it's our mindset. And I'm always trying to feed people on certain books and audios, because I don't care what how-tos you give them. If they still don't believe in themselves and they still got those issues on the inside, it ain't gonna work.
That's right. That's
you know what I'm saying? That's what's going on with us, man. It's our mindset, it's our thought process, it's how we handle objections and how we think through problems and how we, because every challenge that I come up with is a book that I read where somebody was having some problems in there and they made it through. You know what I'm saying? I read John H. Johnson's book, which is a powerful book. That was an autobiography I read before I started getting into the mindset stuff. And just to think what he had to do in the 40s and 50s, a black man, to go to Chicago and build he built the foundation there in Chicago with Ebony Magazine, Jet Magazine. He did it when they wouldn't even let him buy a building. He had to go get a white guy and pay the white guy, give the white guy his money, trust the white guy when he bought the building that he was gonna give it back to him. So he had to go through that whole process of, you know, the challenges he went through. So when I think about my problems and the challenges in business, I just think about one of those things that I read and said, man, that's, you know how they say, what would Jesus do? I would just say, what would one of those guys that I read in the book do? And just go through it.
Wow. Man, that's great. That's great. So talk to me about family, man. How does your wife and your children play into this drive for creating generational wealth for you?
All right. Well, here's the story. I've been married 20 years now, no kids. We actually got married late. Now, my story, Nate, from day one, you can ask my mother, she's 86 years old, and she'll tell you that in high school, my thought process was, I didn't want any kids, period. Because I didn't want to have to deal with somebody like me. I didn't want to have to try to raise somebody like me. So I said, you know, I like kids, but I don't really want it. Now, as for my wife, she did, but by the time we got married, she was past that time where she's like, I don't really want to have it. So we didn't have any kids. But as for me working the business, like, she has that kind of entrepreneur mindset. I actually met her she had a booth, not a booth, but what do you call those kiosks in the mall. And so she was doing some things. Her father was an entrepreneur. And so she already had that mindset. So I didn't have to deal with, you know, where you going now and why you out so late and, you know, why you trying to make this money. She grew up in a household where her dad, you know, did that. Her dad owned a couple of Burger Kings. He had a Firestone. He had a Coors distributorship. He traveled. He moved. So she, you know, when people say, and I can't say this because I don't have any kids, so I can't say this, but I was raised, I mean, I was a kid, so I was raised by my father. When people say, well, you got to give them, you know, a lot of time. My wife, I don't know anybody that loves their father more than she loves her father. I don't know. We've been married 20 years, and I tell you, her father lives in Cleveland. She hadn't missed his birthday in 20 years. She's there for 2 weeks. Now, he went in the house all the time. Matter of fact, he was on the road a lot, but she still loved him. You know, people always say, well, you're not around and they ain't gonna love you. Oh no, I don't know anybody love their father more than she loves her father. You know what I'm saying? But she learned that he was an entrepreneur and that's how they operated in life. And so, you know, I would say that when you ask about family, I don't have those challenges that a lot of people have. And I'm telling you, that's one of the things in business that knocks people out of the box is that the significant other is thinking differently. You know what I'm saying? And not only that, you outgrow the significant other. You start reading books, you go into events, and that person's not. You know, that's a breakup in the family because one person is growing, the other person is not. So I don't have that situation. I don't have that issue there. But, you know, I got, you know, husband and wife issues. Everybody have that. But besides that, no, I don't, not a challenge for me.
Got it. And what things do you do? What do you enjoy alongside, you know, changing people's lives? What are some hobbies or interests you have?
Whoa. I don't, that's so crazy. See, now here's a window of time that I didn't talk to you about. And I hadn't talked to a lot of people about. Matter of fact, I don't even talk a lot about it. And there's no way possible I could talk a lot about it now. But I would say between 17 and 28, the life that I lived, I lived 12, 13 years like somebody would live that's 80. So a lot of things that I did, which we consider entertainment that people do now, I don't do that anymore. You know what I'm saying? Because I really did it. I mean, I did it. So my entertainment would be outside of changing people's lives is still reading. Not really much, man. I'll tell you, I'm really a bored dude. I mean, a boring dude. If you want to come around me like that, I don't, don't smoke, don't drink, don't. So I'm really that kind of guy. But it's because I did a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a story to be told about that too, man. I tell you, it's a real story there that we could talk about one time. And I really break that down that I actually did that the other day with a guy and he was amazed. He said, man, you could do a movie from 17 to 28. But, you know, I don't really talk about that a lot. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Got it. Well, like I said, either way, I will tell you that I can appreciate and relate in regards to the way you describe yourself, because someone asked me that, and I kind of say that as well. But for me, it's more so because I can think of a time in my life in which I just did a lot of stuff that other people wanted to do. One of the reasons I went to Germany as an 18-year-old because I wanted to just live. I wanted to experience life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the opportunity to do that. I remember when I tell people about, you know, me saying I don't remember where my money went when I was a soldier. And I was like, well, yeah, dude, it went to beer, pizza, and women, hotels. Okay. I do know it wasn't at the tender, but I remember where it went.
Right.
That's where it was being run. You know, but things that I enjoy doing are really low key. You know, I read, Mm-hmm. I enjoy time with my wife. I enjoy time with my kids. I enjoy travel. Right. I worked out. I like to go down to the basketball court. I like to go down to the beach.
Well, Well, that's what you're saying. I do work out because it's so a part of my life now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So good. I work out every day, every morning. Now, when the pandemic first hit, I probably stayed out of the gym for about 7-8 months. And that's when only thing I could do was walk, man. I probably walked 8-9 miles a day. I mean, seriously, I would go out an hour, you know, 3 times a day and just walk through the neighborhood. So but then about 2 or 3 months ago, I started going back to the gym. And so I'm in there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, every day. And I've been doing that, Nate, for 13, 14 years. I told my trainer, Nate, the same trainer. Every time I talk to him, I mess with him yesterday. I said, man, I done put your kids through school. I done I'm always messing with him. I got him a couple of cars just off the money I done paid you. But so, yeah, I do. I do like traveling. Spend time with my wife, you know, books. But I can't really... Maybe you keep talking. I'll say, okay, I do that too.
But once again, we're in the same because literally okay. It's like I don't have a compartmental. See, here's the reason I bring that up. When I say live in fullness every day, I literally have a 24-hour clock. Mm-hmm. I'm not like this isn't work for me right here. Mm-hmm. You know, me being on the phone with someone that I actually want to talk to, if I'm coaching stuff, I'm not inconvenienced.
Exactly. Right.
You know, I'm not getting like, Yeah, it's not like I'm being, you know, somebody's doing, making me do something. It's literally like, for me, it's like, whatever I want to do, I'm doing that. And I'm enjoying that, which I'm doing. Whereas there's not a clock out and it's like, oh, it's the weekend now. Ooh, man, what are you going to do this weekend? Right, I don't have that lifestyle. and I haven't had it and I don't know when. Because, but I like to oftentimes we'll ask that question because it's the fullness that I want people to always experience and recognize that, yeah, there are things that are being done that causes income, but everyone doesn't have it where it's a job.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have found themselves in a situation where their work is their passion. Their work is their vocation.
Right.
And it pays them. And I think that's perspective.
It's hard for people to really relate to that when they don't live that like that. They don't understand that. They thinking, you know, you're working hard. And it's almost like it's work when you're not doing it. When you're doing it, what you want to do is not work. But when you're not doing it, then you got to work in your mind trying to figure out something that, you know, that's why you see guys who are successful musicians. They be in the studio. Like Dr. Dre said, he probably missed 1 day or 2 days in 30 years in the studio. Because that's what he does. That's his life. That's what that's how he lives. And so a lot of people don't have something like that. They just kind of go to work to get the money to pay the bills. And they really don't want to be there. And so it's hard for them to understand when somebody says what you said or what I just said. You know, this is my thing. This is what I like doing. I can't get tired doing it. But to the average person, they're like, that sounds crazy. I want to go lay on the beach. I want to go somewhere else. And I understand that. If that's your thing, that's cool. But, you know, it's not mine.
Right, right. And the thing for me is I call my kids when I moved from the D.C. metro to Jacksonville, Florida, early retirement, when I say financially was able to pick up and move, I did so because all I want to do is be that dad that was around.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I had my children, Nadia and Trey, who now 16 and 15, you know, when I think about it, I was always there. So that means that my kids always knew that daddy was available. But just because they saw me didn't mean that daddy wasn't working.
Right.
That they had to tell me, all they had to do is tell me that they wanted me for something or needed me to be somewhere, then I'm good. I said, but otherwise, daddy's working.
Right.
So we would go down to the pool or we at the beach and I would oftentimes hear family members say, you know, man, he's always on that phone. Well, why don't you put that phone down and why don't you just relax? And I would look and I would say, wait a minute. I'm in the pool with my children and there's nobody else here.
Right.
I said, what would relaxing look like to you? Would it be me sitting down with my feet up, drinking a beer? I said, that's not me. You know, right. So it was interesting that I had to make sure that my kids were conditioned to understand that in spite of what other people may paint a picture right. of, it's like, right. wait a minute, you guys got daddy. I'm on all the field trips. I'm at all the celebration. I'm on everything. But because that was not what everyone else experienced, I just put the suit and tie and the titles to the side. And right. like, no, this is what I want. I don't care about the titles. I don't care about this. I got that.
Right.
But I don't need that to be validated. My validation is that I'm able to choose what I do with this thing that I don't have promised with, which is time. And that's why my life really changed at 19 when I walked perimeter during Desert Storm. And I said, Lord, if you allow me to make it back, I know which day of my life. There's nothing more valuable to me than my time, period.
I can't imagine at 19 being, there's a song by Paul Hardcastle called 19. I don't know if you ever heard it. You ought to listen to it if you haven't heard it. It's called 19, and it's talking about the average age of the Vietnam soldier was 19 years old. And he tells a story throughout that song, 19. And I can't imagine at 19 having to go somewhere with a gun and fight, knowing, to a foreign country, not mm-hmm. knowing the people and dealing with that. Just that part of it, man, to make it through that, that's insane. How long were you there?
6 months.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Like I said, forever changed my life because it gave me perspective of saying purpose. Number one, my name is Nathaniel, which means God's gift. And in that moment when I made that vow, it really pulled all things together because I said, my singular focus is to give myself away, to be a person of value, to give people that, to be a walking example, to be in the embodiment of saying that truly God is faithful and that promise that he has for you individually is there. All you got to do is have enough belief to walk it out.
How did you feel when you knew you were going? Now, I know we got tough guys and people want to do that. I'm going to give you an example. My uncle was in the military. He was in the Army and he went to Vietnam. And he said that before he went, people wasn't really thinking about going. He said, because that was, he was at a place where, you didn't know where you were going or not until like somebody showed up or something. Like he said, so they would be joking around and all that. And then this one particular admiral, whatever, I think it was admiral, if he showed up at your base, you knew then that some of y'all was going to Vietnam. And when he showed up that day, he said, everybody got serious. I mean, everybody straightened up. It wasn't no plan. And when he got that touch on the shoulder to say, you going, he said he thought totally different about it then, because you don't think about it that you're really going until you go. And at 19, how did that, were you ready to go for that? Or?
No. What happened was literally when we got the word, it was then reality. I found myself as a teenager walking around my room with a video camera and speaking into the camera and highlighting simple things such as this TV stand, this TV, and talking to my family about who could have divvying it up because wow. I didn't know if I was going to make it back.
Right.
And literally just going and saying, okay, take care of this, take care of that. So no, it's nobody, it wasn't a thing of like, oh yeah, man, we're going into zone. No, man, it was like, okay, this is time. Now it's time for us to do our job. This is right. where it ain't about whether or not I want to, but this is really what, unbeknownst to me, this is what I signed up for. Meaning right. I knew what it was, but I didn't really know what it was right. until the call came. But right. that right there is what when I talk about that whole, this thing of preparing, mm-hmm. that's when I first experienced it. It was literally, I call it a video will of literally saying, if I don't make it back, here's the way I want this stuff to be debited out. And let me tell wow. you that I love you, family. And this is da, 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 da. Because I was in Germany when I got this call. This is when I was deployed. I was deploying from Germany. So I had already been away from my family. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those things. And yeah, man, it's one of those things.
I know you can get deep with it and talk about it because 6 months is a long time. I know some people did longer than that, but 6 months every day, that's a long time to be. Think about one day, how long that is, but 6 months is a long time. So
yeah. And also it's not even about the length of time. It's about what was the exposure.
Right.
So you can be deployed.
And not be in the fight.
But not be there. You right. can be deployed and not see anything. You can be right. deployed and not smell anything. Right. Not. So there's a whole experience about it right. that ain't about the length of time. It's about what quality over quantity. It's literally one of those things right there. And so, yeah, that's the deal, man. So, but great. Thank you for asking that question, because inevitably it ties back to why it is and why I'm about talking to you about what the bankers and brokers don't tell. And why I believe that everyone needs to have their hand in network marketing. Mm-hmm. I think that when people go to page 21 of my book and they go through their numbers and I have them to manually identify their particular financial situation, most people will be alarmed to see that they don't have enough to provide the cash flow that they would need if they wanted to retire.
Right.
That's why 68% of people are unable to retire comfortably. And so with that said, with this industry, what is it that you have come to appreciate and learn over these years that's different than when you started? So how has it changed? What was your mindset when you started about what it is, to what have you evolved into understanding what it is? What gives you that? Well,
yeah, when I started, you know, I didn't realize that people had all these insecurities, all these challenges from that early age. You know, I just didn't realize that. I was thinking that, you know, if you go out here and do what you're supposed to do, then you're going to get what you're supposed to get. Or that if you just tell people what to do, that they're going to go do it. Because, you know, when people told me what to do, I would go do it. But then I didn't realize that it was certain things I was already doing before then. I was a person that had a little bit different, like I brought a little bit to the table. Some people don't bring anything to the table. I brought a little bit to the table. And so when I got more information, it changed me. But I was probably 10 years into the network marketing before I realized, because I believed everybody. You know what I'm saying? I really did. When people would tell me they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And then when they didn't do it, after a while, I started saying, why are people, you know? And then I realized that they might in their mind think that they really going to do it. They really think this, but they don't know the things that's going on the inside of them. And so now when I think about it, when people say stuff, I just, you know, I don't move as fast and move. I just, let me see it first. Let me see it happen first compared to, you know, I was to jump all the time. As soon as somebody, you know, said what they were going to do, you know, I'm ordering my purple Bentley. I'm like, we about to go get rich. And then those people disappear. I'm like, oh, I thought you said you was going to do this. And now I realize that they might have the best intentions and they might really feel like they can do it. They're going to do it. But once they start, that inner me, that person that's been sitting there dealing with all the other stuff is still there. And so it's challenging for them. So I would say, my expectations, a lot of people are not as high as it was then, you know, but that doesn't mean I'm negative. It's just that I know that certain people will win big and some not. It's almost like, you know, everybody's not gifted with a voice, you know, to sing, you know, and just because you want to go in a room and sing, don't mean you're going to be Whitney Houston. And it's almost the same thing with people. Some people are not going to just do what they need to do to change their life. They're just not. Some people will. So I would say that what I've learned over the years from the time in the beginning to now is patience to see what's going to happen before I get too excited and believe in that. You know, I want to believe in you. I mean, I'm not saying you can't, but I can't get too emotionally tied up in stuff until I see some results.
Yeah. So you got some wisdom behind you.
Yeah.
I got it.
No, it's wisdom, but a lot of people say, well, Tony, you're not, you know, you don't believe in people or you don't. No, I mean, I do. I really do. I just know that a lot of people don't realize the challenges they're going to have to go through. Like you said, when they put you in the fight in the ring, they want to let people know, but it's you know, what you got to go through to win in life. And I don't think most people, you know, I got a good friend of mine. Her son is just went off to college. And her biggest challenge is about something else with him. But my biggest challenge, I've been around him, is that same thing. Like you said, I don't think he ever been in a fight. And I know it's going to be some guys try him in college. You know what I'm saying? So that's my thought about that. I was like, man, I got it. So I told him, I'm here for you, whatever you need. I don't want to be like, you know, hovering over him. But I know that if you never done that and you're doing that, that rough part of that part there is different than anything else. So, you know, it's again, belief and does people have enough toughness to win in life? And I just have to sit back and watch it.
That's right. And like I said, I completely agree. It's not a statement about believing in people. It's just mm-hmm. whether or not they'll step up. Mm-hmm. It's not a question about whether or not they're able. It's right. not about whether or not you're capable.
Exactly.
Yep. So, man, this has been awesome. I really appreciate this time with you. I like to wrap it up to see if you have any questions that you have of me or how may I be of service to you.
No, I think you should just keep doing what you're doing, man. I think your background, West Point, and your experience, you know, brings a whole lot of credibility to what we do in the network marketing industry. And so people need to take advantage of that and understand that because, you know, you're the person that most people say, well, why would you be doing this? You know what I'm saying? Why? And you bring credibility to it, you know, whether you were doing it or not, you know. I got a couple of guys that bring credibility to it that are not even in the field of network marketing, but they believe in it. They're doing something else, but they have degrees. They have their doctor's degree there, and they bring credibility to say, hey, man, you know, it's the best way for you to learn life. It's the best way for you to learn to be successful. But see, you're in the mix and you got credibility behind you. So I just say, keep doing what you're doing, man.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, once again, I definitely will continue, and I'll continue to bring forth, you know, great stories of guys like you, guys that I trust, guys that I have respect for. You know, the reality is that we're stronger together, mm-hmm. and I just want to be the voice that simply says that take away my degrees from tier one schools, take away the fact that I've been a CFO of an Inc. 500 fast growing company. I've been licensed in all the different financial areas for a global wealth management firm. I've owned a 40-unit apartment complex. I've owned a tax franchise. I've got some perspective. And with that said, in all the things that I could be doing, I don't see anything that's a better engagement of my time and knowledge right. in order to impact the most lives. And yep. inevitably, people are the assets. And so my focus is very simple. I want to cause families to change generational trees. And as you stated, it's the mindset. And there's no yep. greater bang for your buck than network marketing to get exposure to the mindset at the lowest dollar amount. Because that's what happened for me in 1996. Yep. I got exposed to it and I was like, this is it? Why isn't everyone talking about this space? Exactly. Everybody should join here for the educational component and the growth environment.
Exactly.
That just is it.
It's a no-brainer, man, because you don't get this anywhere else.
Right.
You just don't get it anywhere else. And that's amazing. But again, I guess that's the condition that we have that we don't realize that. But the people who wake up to it and realize it, oh man. It's like, you know, it's like caveman seeing fire, you know, for the first time. It's like, wow. Yeah.
Yep. So as a father, for all you parents out there, that's my message. My message is simply, as a parent that has the degrees, that has done the corporate track, I'm saying that as a father of a 16 and a 15-year-old, I'm not raising them to go to college. Right. What that simply means is that I'm asking them three questions. Do you want a job, a career, or a life? And based upon the track that they desire, I'm equipped to help them move along, but that does not forsake the fact that I can give them Think and Grow Rich. I can give them As a Man Thinking. I can tell them The Richest Man in Babylon. I can give them all these things that is not coming in the classroom right. so that they can in turn be able to realize that truly they are the asset. And so, Tony,
And life is rich.
There you go. Oh, thank you. Absolutely, absolutely. So, Tony, tell us, where can we connect you, man? Where can we find you at?
You know, I'm mainly on Facebook. I guess that's old school, but I'm on Instagram too at at Mr. Tony Fleming on Instagram. So okay. I'm there. That's my comedic part. Facebook, just at Tony Fleming. There's a couple of pages on there. You'll see me there. Okay. I'm also on Twitter, but I'm not there as much. So I don't even give out Twitter. But those are the places you can find me, you know.
Awesome. Man. Awesome. And I'll also give everybody the plug to make sure that you guys check out his book club, his morning book club.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I don't know why. You can find me on 16 different podcast platforms. See, we got a conference call that we do during the week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and it's mindset. And then on Saturday is the book club. All right. So, but I record all those and then we put them on the podcast platform because it's easy access to get to it. So you can go to Spotify, you can go to Breaker, you can go to iTunes, you can go to Apple. If you put in Tony Fleming mindset, all those calls will come up. There's about 180 of them out there. So, but we just load them on there so it's easy access for people to get to them and share them and, you know, listen to them over and over because, you know, learning is repetition. You got to keep hearing it over and over and over. You know, I always say, it's not what you say, it's what you keep saying. Not what you do is what you keep doing. Not what you hear is what you keep hearing. Is the keep is the operative word. So by putting it on the podcast, they can keep going back to it and keep hearing it.
Awesome. Well, all right, everyone. Hey, again, this is Nate Scott, author of Life is Rich, How to Create Lasting Wealth. Today I had Mr. Tony Fleming dropping us mad nuggets in regards to mindset, personal growth, and development. Guys, I ask that you will just simply take a listen to this, and if you got value from it, be sure to give us a 5-star rating, give us a review, and to share it. Until next time, take care and be blessed.
Thank you for listening to the Life is Rich podcast. I'm your host, Nate Scott. Remember, if I tell you, you'll forget. If I teach you, you'll remember. But if I involve you, you'll learn. One way to get involved is to rate, subscribe, and leave feedback on iTunes by answering the question, what did you like best about what you heard? One of the problems faced by Christian entrepreneurs striving for success is having an alliance with like-minded people working together for a common, definite objective. Would you like to join a community of Life is Rich soldiers? If so, please rate and subscribe to the Life is Rich podcast on iTunes and text GROWTH to 904-204-0846 for the link and this month's free book. Again, please rate and subscribe to the Life is Rich podcast and text GROWTH to 904-204-0846. Again, my name is Nate Scott. Take care and be blessed.